I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Thanks for being with us. So Amazon recently announced a slew of new smart hardware products, and those are everything from glasses to rings to earbuds to smart ovens. These are products with smart speakers that have become very popular with consumers. But they also have been criticized for how they erode privacy and basically hand over personal information to Amazon. And we asked you, and many of you told us, you're torn.
This is Reem calling from Ridgewood, New Jersey. Our family uses Alexa to play music, our favorite public radio stations, set timers. We do purchase things on Amazon through Alexa, and privacy is always a concern.
Hi, this is John Enga in Anacortes, Washington. We do use Alexa. However, knowing the privacy issues, we definitely unplug it every time we're not using it.
Hi, this is Kelly in San Jose. I use it to wake up in the morning. It controls the lights in my house. It monitors packages. I guess I assume that I have no privacy, and I've accepted that as the consequence for me to receive the conveniences.
And there's a lot of confusion about exactly what happens to your data when you have Alexa in your home. I mean, how much information it's collecting and where that information is going. So with all these privacy concerns, we were wondering why these products are just so popular with the general public. And if talking to a smart speaker will soon become just as normal as scrolling through your smartphone. Joining me now to clear up some of this confusion is Matt Day, a technology reporter with Bloomberg, and Sydney Fussell, a staff writer at The Atlantic who covers technology. Welcome to you both.
No, thank you for having me.
Matt, let's start with you. Specific to Amazon and the products that it's releasing, what can you tell us about the latest?
So Amazon is probably best known as far as its modern tech for its Alexa voice assistant, right? The resident of the Echo smart speaker that sits on your kitchen table, sits in your living room. And sort of the story of Amazon in the last few years has been their effort to make Alexa, the voice software, more pervasive, right? To put it on the road in the car with you, to get it on your smartphone, and recently, as of last week, to put it on your person, right? So that you can kind of summon this voice assistant, and get it to play music, ask it the weather, and do sort of other useful functions kind of in any context you might want to summon that piece of software.
Sydney, Amazon wants essentially to be everywhere and is everywhere right now. I mean, you know, you think about just your, you know, everything you buy. One of the reasons why I'm often hesitant to buy too much on Amazon, and I'm probably an outlier here, is that I just keep thinking about how much they'll know about me. I mean,
I'm the same way.
Right? I mean, good. I'm glad. And is this about Amazon trying to get people in the habit to always be talking to its Alexa?
Yes and no. I mean, the latest sort of line of products that they were introducing was Alexa wearables, which is literally a wearable microphone that you have, you know, on your hand via the Amazon Loop, I think it was called. It's a ring you have on your hand where you can talk to Alexa. Earbuds that you can talk to Alexa with. So on the one hand, yes, absolutely, they're trying to get you to go everywhere with Alexa. But when they were announcing the new products, what I thought was really interesting was they were talking about how you can, they used the phrase snack on information. They used the phrase focus on every day. And they were really focusing on not including screens with the new product. So on the one hand, yes, they're doubling down and they want you to take Alexa everywhere. But on the other hand, they're marketing these products as ways to get away from the phone, to get away from the notifications, as ways to sort of like relax or almost disengage from this intense screen-heavy, notification-heavy life we live. Dave Limp, who's the SVP of Alexa devices, said it's a way to focus on your everyday instead of looking at your phone all the time. So I think that they register that people like us are terrified and exhausted from Amazon being everywhere and, you know, checking out notifications all the time, but also like want a break from that, which is what they're saying these new products will do.
Matt, do we know how many people actually have Alexa?
So Amazon doesn't break out the figures, but we know that they sell millions of these things a year. Various surveys show that, you know, somewhere between a quarter or a third of American households have a smart speaker. They are definitely the market leader in this category they've invented, but there's plenty of company now. Google's marketing a similar device. Apple's got one on the market. There are a bunch of Chinese vendors working on this. So a lot of companies are betting that they're sort of in the future we will be interacting with voice software rather than a smartphone or a computer screen.
Sydney, I don't have an Alexa, but if I had an Alexa, if I gave it a command to do something, or if there have been lots of stories that say, you know, your Alexa is listening to your conversation and you don't even know it, where does that information go? Like, does Amazon actually do anything with that? Are they listening to my conversation?
Yes and no. There was a little bit of a scandal, and I'll tell you why that's not the best word for it in a minute. But basically, some information came out through, actually, I think Bloomberg broke this story about how when Alexa devices overhear you, one of the things that can happen with that data is they can sort of like excerpt little audio clips 30 seconds at a time and send that to human reviewers that are being contracted out who listen to the audio of what was excerpted out. And so basically, when you think of someone looking at someone, you know, sitting at a desk looking at three different things. They're looking at the audio that was excerpted, which is basically what you said to the device, and they're looking at what Alexa thinks you said. And they're comparing the two, and they're trying to see, okay, like, is Alexa good at, you know, listening to certain words, hearing certain accents, recognizing certain phrases? And so it was very startling for people to know that actual human beings would sometimes listen to the things that were recorded on Alexa, but, you know, 1% of 1% and only certain phrases, it's anonymized, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's important to know that, you know, though, like, oh, Alexa's listening, yes, it is, and people are listening to me, yes, they are. But the reason I don't really think of that as a scandal is that this is also true of devices connected to Microsoft Skype, connected to Facebook Messenger. This sort of idea of humans listening in and reviewing AI products to improve them already existed. That's just how they work. So the reason it's not really a scandal, to my mind, is that it's not like some like shocking thing. It's just how they work. I think it really illuminated how little we actually know about how these devices work or what it means when Amazon or Microsoft says, you know, we'll use your data to improve the device. We're just blind to a lot of these things.
One of the other places that we're seeing a lot of technology, Matt, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because I was recently in a Tesla. I had not been in one before, was looking for any type of button that I could find. And guess what? There are no buttons. It's just a big old screen. A lot of technology is being implemented in cars now. And Matt, what is changing? I mean, how is technology in cars in terms of its software changing?
So there's kind of a couple of things that works. The first is just the immense amount of processing power compared to the old days that you can pack into a small device. So cars essentially are becoming sort of powered by computers, right? Whether it's regulating the engine or sort of showing you that, you know, infotainment device to listen to music or what have you. And so that combined with, you know, sort of big tech's interest in the car, whether it's Tesla, whether it's Google or Apple or now Amazon trying to put its applications on your car, people just kind of see the car as sort of an extension of this modern computing age, right? And that's kind of the change we're seeing as our apps are going to start to follow us into our cars. And then as we've been talking about voice, one of the big pushes recently is getting kind of voice software on the dashboard, right? Your ability to, you know, toggle a station or the climate control system without lifting a finger. So maybe it's not just the buttons that'll go away. Eventually, you'll just do it all with your voice is kind of the aim of big tech right now.
Sydney, you talked about how Amazon has given a very small amount of its Alexa audio recordings to people to transcribe. And when that became public, it really upset a lot of people. I mean, even though it's standard practice for a lot of tech companies that make these smart speakers. So what's Amazon's stance on privacy these days?
Sort of broadly speaking, when we look across industries, across technologies, we're trying to make everything smaller and faster and cheaper and eventually render it invisible, going, you know, from like touch tones to a touch screen, going from a touch screen to just no screen whatsoever. It's just operated by your voice. So I think that on the one hand, we're sort of seeing privacy emphasize certainly all these, you know, everyone has a privacy policy. Everyone puts out statements of how they respect privacy. Alexa, for example, has this option to go in and pause recording or delete past recordings. But I think that on the one hand, you have an emphasis on privacy, but technology itself is moving the opposite way, where they don't even want you to really think of these as devices. One thing I think about when I think about Alexa is that it doesn't feel like you're Googling something. You know, you're not holding anything in your hand. So I think that we're sort of seeing a sort of like Amazon's going two different directions at once, where on the one hand, they emphasize privacy and like, yes, we care about it. You should care about it too. But on the other hand, they're doing these things to make it where they collect your data without even realizing you've used a device because everything's getting smaller. Like it went from a speaker to just like a ring on your finger, but it's the same interactions and the same data is being collected. So I think that in terms of where Amazon is, they're going to continue to say that they care a lot about privacy, but they're going to make their products so seamless and so invisible and so easy to use that you don't even think about how your data is being collected.
Matt, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, one thing that years ago, the federal government was very much involved in this privacy fight, particularly when it came to data brokers, people that take the information and decide what they want to do with it and sell it later. One of the responses to that has been giving consumers the ability to, quote, opt out, to say, I don't want, you know, cookies, or I don't want any of this other information, and whether that's on Facebook or other places. But I find that the ability to do that, I don't know how important that is to folks. What are you seeing?
Well, it's a great question how much people actually care about privacy. You know, when it comes to voice assistants, you know, somewhere about a quarter of people say they would never buy a smart speaker just because they're worried about the privacy implications. But I think from a broader perspective, you know, certainly in the U.S., the technology has outpaced, you know, government regulation on this. You know, so many of the laws on the books governing privacy at the federal level did not envision, you know, an always-on corporate-owned microphone in your home or certainly on your ring finger in your car. And so I think there's kind of a view in big tech that, you know, as long as you have consumers' consent, you know, via these really broadly written privacy policies that, of course, none of us ever read, there is a lot you can do with that data. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, as we've discussed with Alexa, it's things that they were not necessarily upfront about or taking you with them on. There's just a lot that we don't know, and a lot that consumers don't bother to read up on, you know, when they start using these devices.
And Sydney, we've talked a little bit about how this information is being used, and we're seeing a lot about what these products can actually do. But do these smart devices, in your opinion, outweigh the privacy costs? I mean, you know, why aren't people more concerned? Is it just because we're used to it, and younger generations in particular, this is what they've been raised on, and they're used to kind of, you know, being more public about their lives?
I think that's part of it, but I also, I'd like to sort of zoom out a little bit and go back to the Jetsons, which I was a big fan of when I was younger.
Thank you, Sydney. I like the Jetsons too. Thank you.
Yes, yes. And I mean, ultimately, we were excited about this. I mean, decades ago, before we even knew what an IoT device was, we were excited about the idea of just a home that sort of operated itself and helped you out. And so I think that just at a baseline level, we want these products because they're cool and they're helpful. But I mean, I also think that sort of to argue against myself a little bit, one part of this conversation that doesn't get brought up a lot is accessibility. And so smart home devices and voice assistants are extremely useful for people that are older, people that are disabled. They do lots of really helpful things in terms of, you know, being able to alter the thermostat or, you know, turn on the oven with your voice, or, you know, instead of like trying to find the remote and pick it up, you can, you know, use your voice. As Amazon goes from device to device and each one becomes more normal, we've already given a little bit of data. And so, you know, what's a little bit more? If I already have Alexa collecting what I say at home, it's not that big of a deal to, you know, put it on my ring finger and then, or like put it in my car. I think that it starts off just like a little bit at a time. And then over time, we become used to it. As time passes and they move from device to device, it gets easier and easier to sacrifice privacy because you've already sacrificed a little bit, and these devices are genuinely useful.
The flip side to that is for Amazon in particular, that they've come under scrutiny in the way that they cooperate with the federal government and with local law enforcement in terms of, you know, the use of their technology. I mean, are those relationships based on data that Amazon collects from everyday users?
They are, yeah. And that's one of the kind of risks as, you know, we turn over all of this data, and that companies learn so much more about us from our behavior online, from our behavior talking to voice assistants, is, you know, companies often don't, you know, go about deleting that data. So what happens when that data is sitting in a pile somewhere is that governments can come calling for it, right? In the U.S., often, and ideally, that's with a warrant, but, you know, Amazon's sort of smart doorbell and camera division Ring out of Southern California has come under some scrutiny for, you know, ongoing relationships with police departments. You know, in some cases, they've offered an app where, you know, with the user's consent, you can turn over video recordings of your front porch, say, proactively to police departments. And then, of course, there's the flip side of what happens when the authorities come knocking for what they know is there anyway. And it's a kind of a gray area in law, particularly around voice assistants, exactly what access governments have to it and you know, how informed users should be about that process.
I just want to follow up on what Matt was saying, which is something people don't realize, which is that Fitbit data, which is on your wrist, and then Amazon Ring data, as well as Alexa data, they've all been used in murder trials. They've all been used as ways to create a timeline by police to see, you know, what was this person doing before and after a certain event. And I think that that's scary for people, but it's a turning point. And I think that it's interesting because on the one hand, the law itself is very much behind the times. But on the other hand, police departments are very much with the times. And so they're interested in social media. They're interested in Amazon Ring footage. They're interested in Nextdoor and Citizen. Police departments are turning right at the same pace as Amazon. I think we're a little bit behind. And I think that the law itself, in terms of regulations around data collection, particularly in the U.S., is the furthest back. They're the slowest.
My question to you then, I guess that the last question would be, is it possible for anyone to be, quote unquote, off the grid?
No, that's a great question. I mean, not if you opt into any of these online services, certainly. I think it's just getting harder and harder to accept the conveniences of that, or to avoid accepting the conveniences of that, rather, offered by all these modern technologies. You know, in a lot of cases, it's, you know, the only way to fully opt out and get off the grid, as you say, is to not use them at all. You know, sort of the default trade-off you make when you plug in that smart oven is that smart oven is tracking every time you turn it on or off, and you know, you might not be completely informed as to where that data goes. So these are just by using this tech and by being on the grid, you are certainly developing a profile of yourself with these tech companies. No other way around that besides unplugging the thing in many cases.
Matt Day, technology reporter at Bloomberg, and Sydney Fussell, staff writer at The Atlantic, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.